Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So today is Bhishmashtami, the appearance of Grandfather Bhishma. And Grandfather Bhishma is one of the Dwadasha, you know what that means? What? 12 Mahajanas, like Pulad Maharaj, Lord Brahma, etc. And this story of Grandfather Bhishma illustrates that even though one may be a Mahajana, if one takes bad association, one can act like a Durjana. You understand? You know what a Durjana is? Durjana is a bad person. And Mahajana is a great person or a good person. So this is, and then one begins to misunderstand the principles of religiosity. Because the ultimate principle of religiosity or dharma is to do what Krishna wants. One could get stuck in just the rules of dharma and then forget about the purpose of dharma. And that way, one will actually be acting adharmic. One can actually follow the rules of dharma and actually act adharmic, which is actually interesting. And how does one do that? There's several examples given. Of course, one rule of dharma is thou shalt not kill. But if you're protecting someone, you may have to kill someone. The example given in the Mahabharata is that there is a rule, you should always tell the truth. However, under certain circumstances, to protect someone, you should lie. And the circumstance described in the Mahabharata was that once upon a time, there were dacoits, low-class people, chasing a family. And they wanted to kill the family for some reason or other. And then the family took refuge in a sage's ashram. And the dacoits went to the sage and said, "Where is this family?" And the sage said, "I cannot tell a lie. They're in my ashram." And then, therefore, the dacoits killed the family. So the sage was acting adharmically and following the rules of dharma. So the same principle is brought out in Grandfather Bhishma's pastimes. So here's the whole story, and you'll understand the principle after we finish telling the story. Once upon a time, there was a great king. His name was Mahabish. And because he was so great and acted dharmically, he went to heaven. And heaven means you get to enjoy all the celestial beauties and everything like that. So he was there, and they were having a dancing performance. And he was looking to the dancer, which is all right. But at the same time, there was Ganga Devi there. And she wasn't one of the dancers. You're not supposed to look at her because she's a chaste lady. She's not one of the apsaras. The apsaras are the heavenly prostitutes. So she was he was looking at her as the wind blew her skirt up. And he kept staring at her beauty. And when Grandfather, that is Lord Brahma, the Pitamaha, actually Lord Brahma is sometimes called Pitamaha too, in addition to Bhishma. So when Lord Brahma saw that, he cursed Mahabish to fall down to the earth planet because he had acted improperly. And so Mahabish was actually quite upset with this. At the same time, Ganga Devi sort of, you know, liked the attention. And she was thinking, you know, I like him. So maybe I should come down and join him. And so then she walked out of the assembly house, or the assembly place of Lord Brahma. And she saw the Vasus there. The Vasus are also, you know, heavenly, like sages and things like that. And there are 8 Vasus. And the head of the Vasus, his name is Jal. Previously, these Vasus had committed a great sinful act against the sage Vasishta, because they had stolen Vasishta's Uh-oh.
We have another marriage.
Another marriage. I wish people would just take sannyasa. So that's not the marriage taking place right now. That's just normal music. So, I have to concentrate. So they had stolen the desire cow. Where's the speaker? Is there a speaker here? Or?
No, but it's just on the other side of the wall, the back side of the apartment. There's a road back by
the So, it's going to be hard to concentrate. So they had stolen the desire cow of Vasishtha Muni. Maybe we should go inside. Because it's too much for me. All right. Pray that there's no more marriages. Okay, get it off. All right. Come in. Better, there's less sunshine. It's not like I don't have to keep my eyes closed. And then you can close the door too, so that'll give us more sound barriers. No, the outside, solid door. What a relief. So they had stolen the desire cow of Vasishtha Muni. The reason they had stolen the desire cow of Vasishtha Muni is that Jao, who is the oldest of all the Vasus, he desired to get the milk from the desire cow because his wife was nagging him for the milk, and his wife wanted the milk for one of her earth friends because if an earth lady drinks the milk, she stays alive for a very long time. Anyway, so that was the motivation. So Vasishtha Muni naturally cursed them when they stole the cow, and they got cursed to actually live on the earth, be born on the earth. And so they went to Vasishtha Muni and cried and everything like that, said, "We're sorry." It's always good to apologize after you've done something. So, I'm sorry. And Vasishtha Muni said, "All right, we can mitigate," that means lessen the curse. So, because Jao, the oldest of the Vasus, was the primary one responsible, we want him to take the curse for all of us. And Vasishtha said, "Okay, good idea. He can do that. So you just have to be born for a few seconds on the Earth planet. And then after that, you can die and come back here." And they said, "Great, Hari Bol." But Jao has to suffer as long as a birth or as long a lifetime as the rest of us. So they agreed on that. And so that Jao actually later on became Bhishma. That was Grandfather Bhishma. So anyway, so once upon a time, Shantanu was actually Mahabish. Okay, Mahabish becomes Shantanu. So Mahabish becomes Shantanu, and he's strolling along the bank of the Ganges, and he looks, and out of the Ganges comes this beautiful lady who's Ganga Devi. And he looks at her and says, "Wow, are you married?" He looks for her ring. Actually, in India, in those days, they didn't have rings. They had Mangal Sutras and marks on the forehead and everything like that. Ring is a modern Western invention. So, and she says, "No." He says, "Marry me." And she says, "Okay, let's have a prenuptial agreement." Prenuptial agreement means that you sign a contract before you get married, that when you get a divorce, that you get the cat and he gets the dog, or something like that. Did you sign one before you got married? Because you didn't have anything.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to worry about. So anyway, nowadays, because they sign them all the time, because people get divorced. Divorce rate is very high, 60-70%. And some places in Europe, they don't even get married, so they don't bother to get divorced or married. So, she said, I want this agreement that if you ever disagree with me, I'm leaving. And he thought, how could I ever disagree with you? You're so beautiful. You know, this is the logic of someone in love. If someone's in love, they think if the lady is beautiful, she'll never do anything bad. Just like Mohini Murthy, the demons were in love with her. And they thought, because she's so beautiful, she'll be fair. It's not logical, is it? But logic does not belong to those who are in love. The brain scan of those who are in love is exactly the same as those who are snorting cocaine. Just so you know about it. Or eating chocolate. So, no, it's not that bad for chocolate. So he said, of course, let's agree. So they made a deal. He made a deal never to disagree. And so what she did, she continued to kill her children one after the other by drowning them in the Ganges immediately after they were born. Like, pop, pop. You know, like 10 seconds after they were born, she just drowned them. And then he was just like completely upset about the whole thing, but he couldn't say anything because he was so attached to her. He thought, she's going to leave if I disagree with her. So he thought, well, better the children are killed. This is also another point, that lust is so strong that sometimes the mother kills her own children or the father kills the children. There's one story in the United States that one lady, she had a boyfriend, other than her husband, of course, and the boyfriend didn't like the children, so she thought, get rid of the children, they're in the way of our lusty affair, because she didn't consider it lust. Let's see, today is the 15th day after Valentine's Day. So what she did, she put her children, two of them, in a car, and the car was actually on the bank of a lake. And so she took the brake off, you know, the emergency brake, and the car rolled into the lake with the children in it, and she watched as the water filled up the car. Can you imagine a mother doing such a thing? It's a documented case. It actually happened in America. What?
I remember when it happened.
You remember when it happened?
News.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. How could a mother do that? And obviously, she's going to be caught. You know, she's not thinking clearly. So anyway, so that's what lust does. You know, you do things. And of course, with Ganga Devi, it wasn't lust. It was an agreement. We can't blame her for that. But with Shantanu, it was actually lust that kept him from interfering. That's a fact. So anyway, when it got to the eighth child was born, he stopped her. That is, Shantanu stopped her. He said, stop! And she said, okay, goodbye. And then she took her kid with her and had him trained up in different ways. He learned politics from Brihaspati, the Vedas from Vashishta, and fighting from his martial arts guru. Does anyone know who that is?
Parshuram.
First he was called Devavrata, that was his name first, and later on his name became Bhishma, which means terrible vow. So what happened is later on he went to join his father, and his father enthroned him as the Yuvaraj. Yuvaraj means the prince who's going to become the next king. So he was very happy. His father was very happy. Then his father had a little problem too when he was along. That is another problem, being alongside the Ganges River. I guess he had problems with water. So he saw this fisher lady, not fisherman, but this daughter of a fisherman who was actually rowing people across the river. That was her duty. Actually, she wasn't a fisherman's daughter. She was the daughter of King Vasu. And King Vasu, somehow or other, put his seminal fluid in the... had a bird carry it to his wife. There's a whole story in the Mahabharata. And the bird dropped it and went into the mouth of a fish. And the fish actually gave birth to this girl. The fish was caught by the fisherman. And basically, her name was Satyavati, and she, because she was born from a fish, she had a very bad smell, like a fish market. Yeah, she smelled really bad. I mean, hellish. She looked good, but, you know, smelled hell, like hell. So then what happened is that before she met Shantanu, she met Parashara Muni, and Parashara Muni proposed to her, and they had a child that was Vyasadeva, and Parashara Muni gave her the benediction that she would smell good. She was called Ganda Yojana. Ganda Yojana means she smelled so good that for 8 miles you could smell her coming. And, you know, it was just like an entrancing smell, like the best perfume that anyone could get. Like they have these scents that they sell people that are just like, you know, somehow or other taken from animals or human beings that are supposed to just like put you in a trance. Anyway. So by that time she smelled what very good, and she looked, of course, she always looked good, and then she remained a virgin because of the benediction of Parashara Muni, but she had previously been the mother of Shiva Vyasadeva. So Shantanu falls in love with her, and he says, will you marry me? And she says, I got to talk to my father first. And her father says, no, she can't marry you because you already have a son and he's going to be the king. So Shantanu goes back home, and he's in a complete state of depression. You know, he's crying, suicidal, hasn't eaten for a month. You know, completely, like, can't move. And there were no psychiatrists then, so, to analyze his condition. Finally, Bhishma is asking him, what's the problem? And he won't tell his son. But one of his ministers, maybe the prime minister, tells Bhishma, not grandfather, he's actually called Devavrata at that point anyway, tells Devavrata that, you know, your father is pining. That's an interesting word, pining. It's like a pine tree.
Right.
Again, it says pining, becoming thin. That means, you know, when you hear that word, I think it's becoming thin and not eating and everything like that. That's the word, implication I get from that word. Implied meaning of the word. So your father's pining over this girl. He can't marry her. So Bhishma being an, that is Devavrata, it's not Bhishma then. Devavrata being an obedient son goes to the fisherman and says, hey, give your daughter to my father. And the fisherman says, no, because you're going to be the next king and there's going to be fighting and everything. And then Devavrata takes a vow. He says, I will not get married. Why will that become the king first? He says, I'll not become the king. And then the father says, but you may have a son who will claim the kingdom. And then he takes another vow, I will not get married, Akunda Brahmachari. And then he becomes known as Bhishma rather than Devavrata. And so the demigods, they shower flowers from the air, Hanibal, Devavrata becomes Bhishma, terrible vow. For them, it was a terrible vow. It's actually a pretty good vow. But anyway, then he delivers Satyavati to his father. His father's in complete ecstasy. Wow, I got the girl of my dreams. He had learned his lesson from Ganga Devi. It seems like you would learn, the first girl you get starts killing your kids. Second girl, God knows what's going to happen. So, fisherman's daughter. It's really not recommended that a king marry a fisherman's daughter. Anyway, no matter how beautiful she is. Of course, Janaka Panda says that one should accept a wife, even if she comes from a lower class family, if she is qualified. But there's some rules for kings, because kings are supposed to be concerned with breeding. Breeding good progeny who can become the next king or rulers of the kingdom. There's a very high level of consciousness of genetics in the Vedic system. Because usually, an apple comes from an apple tree. Usually you don't see a mango coming from an apple tree. where they say the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. Anyway, so then, so he gets married to her, and they have two kids. Two kids are Vichitravirya and Chitrangada. And Chitrangada is first of all killed by Gandharva, who has the same name, who later on becomes Arjuna's friend and is named Chitraratha. That's a different story in the Mahabharata. So Vichitravirya is there, and Vichitravirya is not such a strong person. You know, he's a little weakly. So Bhishma has to arrange his marriage, because usually the strong people would arrange their own marriages. They would go out to the Swayambhara, show their martial arts, and either kidnap the girl or just win the competition. So for Vichitravirya, we find Bhishma kidnapping three girls. And these three girls are the daughters of the king of Kashi. And their names are Amba, Ambalika, and Ambika. So, all have the same name, which basically means Amba, little Amba, and very little Amba, or something like that. So, but there's a problem. That Amba, the older one, has been promised already to Shalva. And so, even though he kidnaps her, you know, she tells Bhishma later on that, you know, I've been promised, and I've fallen in love. So she's sent back, but Shalva being a regular Kshatriya, he's not going to take back something that's, you know, been taken from him. Kshatriya is not supposed to accept charity, so he refuses. Amba, she goes back to Bhishma and says, you know, therefore, because I've been refused, you should marry me. And Bhishma says, hey, this isn't going to work for two reasons. First of all, I've taken a vow never to get married. Second of all, even though I want to get married, I wouldn't marry someone who hated my guts. You know, for ruining her future. You know, this would be like a disaster. So he refuses. Amba goes basically to an uncle who's a friend of Parashuram. And Parashuram intercedes and tells Bhishma he should marry Amba. Bhishma refuses, and they have a 23-day fight. And that 23-day fight, there's actually some indication that Bhishma, one, he was getting ready to fire the final arrow, but then he was stopped from doing so because it wasn't appropriate for him to kill his guru. And anyway, Parashuram couldn't be killed. He's an incarnation of Krishna. So then Amba decides to do penance to Lord Shiva to be reborn to be the cause of the death of Bhishma. And she becomes reborn as Shikhandi. This is an interesting story. Shikhandi, and she's reborn as a daughter of Drupada. And so Drupada, he wanted a son, and Lord Shiva said, the girl is a son. And he's looking at her, it's a girl. But he has faith in Lord Shiva that it's a son, even though he sees for all intents and purposes, she's a girl. That's how much faith one should have. That if Krishna tells you someone's a girl and it looks like a boy, or someone tells, if he tells you it's a boy and it looks like a girl, you should just like follow that. I mean, that's a hard test of faith. But he had so much faith in Lord Shiva. So Drupada arranges a marriage for who he thinks is his son, which was actually a girl, with a prince. With a princess, I'm sorry. And so here these two princesses are getting married. And this is not nowadays where this is happens all the time. So these two princesses get married. Of course, Shikhandi is dressed like a man, even though Shikhandi is a girl at this particular point. And then later on after the marriage, I guess during the honeymoon or something, then it's discovered by the girl that she's married another girl. And so she gets very angry, goes back to her father and says, you know, this is not going to work. You know, I wanted to marry a man, you know, a prince, and this is, you know, this is too much for me. So, therefore her father, who was another king, gets ready to attack Drupada and destroy Drupada's kingdom. And so Shikhandi feels very, very, let's say, guilty at this point. So she goes to the forest. Basically, she wanted to commit suicide or something like that. She's crying. And there's a yaksha there who hears her cries. The yaksha's name was Stuna Karna. And the yaksha says, all right, I'll solve your problem. You can become a boy. I'll give you my masculinity. And I will take your femininity. I'll become a yakshasini, or something like that. And then, until the marriage happens. And then after that, we can change back, okay? And so she says, very good, so they change. So Shikhandi becomes a boy. And so in the meantime, while she's a boy, the yaksha's boss comes. His boss's name is Kuvera, because Kuvera's in charge of all the yakshas. So he comes to see this yaksha, Stuna Karna. And Stuna Karna is hiding from him, because, you know, obviously, you know, if one day you become a girl, you're going to hide out from your boss. You know, it's just like I go to the brahmachari ashram, and one of the brahmacharis has become a girl. Isn't it? Gokul, you know, there's a Gokulini or something like that one day. I said, well, where is he? You know, he's supposed to join me in Govardhan. Well, he can't come today.
He would have to change my name.
Gokulini or something. So, you know, it'd be quite embarrassing. You wouldn't show yourself up. You'd show up. I mean, you'd probably go out into the woods in Vrindavan or something like that. Because you wouldn't want to walk. You wouldn't want to go back to the brahmachari ashram after that. So anyway, so this yaksha, Stuna Karna, is hiding. And then when Kuvera finds out what happens, he becomes so angry. He says, what did you do this stupid thing for? And he curses the yaksha, or yakshini at this particular point, to keep the femininity. And Shikhandi to stay masculine. Until Shikhandi dies, then the yaksha gets back his yakshahood, or his manhood, or whatever it's called with the yaksha. All right. So then, so Shikhandi is there. And so that, then what happens is that Grandfather Bhishma, okay, let's go back to the whole Mahabharat story. So you have Grandfather Bhishma has to... Back to the beginning. So you have the two sons of Satyavati and Shantanu, which is Vichitravirya and Chitrangada. And Vichitravirya, after he marries, not Amba, but Ambika and Ambalika, he dies. Because he's so attached to his wives, he's, you know, I guess he's fed grapes all the time and doesn't eat a proper diet, and he gets sicker and sicker, and he's just like enamored by them. You know, there's a whole story of love too. Then he dies. So therefore, Satyavati, who at this particular point is a widow because Shantanu has also died, Satyavati is thinking, you know, who's going to become the king? Because she's responsible. She's the queen at that point. And so she says to Grandfather Bhishma, who's not a grandfather, but Bhishma, she says, therefore the rule is the brother, even half-brother, can have a child with his brother's wife. So you should do this. And he said, no, it's not my duty, I'm brahmachari. And then they resolve to bring in Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva is also the brother or half-brother of all these particular individuals. And he has a relationship with Ambika and Ambalika. And you all know the story that Ambika, she closes her eyes. You know, she can't stand the sight of Vyasadeva because he's been engaged in austerity for such a long period of time, and he looks pretty hairy. You know, sometimes the sages are described as very hairy and matted hair and everything like that. And so she gives birth to a blind son. Does anyone know the name? Not Duryodhana. Dhritarashtra. And then the other one, Ambalika turns white. She knows not to close her eyes, but she gets scared. And she gives birth to Pandu. Okay, so you have that whole story of the Mahabharata. And so then you have Dhritarashtra marrying Gandhari, who's an Afghan girl, Kandahar. And they have their 100 sons and one daughter. Actually, there were 101 sons because he had a son by a maidservant also. And then you have Pandu, who couldn't have children because he was cursed. And he has 5 sons by the different demigods. And that can tell the whole story of the Mahabharata. So then what happens is the Kauravas, and actually in one sense they're all Kauravas because it's the Kuru dynasty, but they considered themselves Kauravas, the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, and they didn't consider the Pandus Kauravas because this was the fratricidal conception. Fratricidal means to kill, like insecticide. Fratricidal means to kill your brothers. So they tried to kill, especially Duryodhana. He tried to kill Bhimsen many times and the other Pandavas many times. Anyway, there's under the auspices of Shakuni, their uncle. And so what happened is that Grandfather Bhishma never really took sides, which he should have taken sides. The reason he didn't take sides, he just remained neutral while all these things were happening. The reason he didn't take the side of Dharma, because he had vowed obedience to the king. In other words, this is the point, that he had made a promise to always support the king when he arranged his father's marriage with Satyavati. In other words, he wouldn't have a child, he wouldn't become the king, and he would always support and do whatever the king said. So he stuck to his promise, which was Dharma, and that caused him to commit adharmic acts. Does everyone understand the principle? So that's the underlying message we get from Grandfather Bhishma's pastimes here. So then what happens? So many things happen. Grandfather Bhishma just sits back while Draupadi is being attempted to be disrobed by Dushyasana. And it's just like, he just loses his religiosity. And also, Prabhupada said he became contaminated by eating food cooked in Duryodhana's kitchen. So that's also a message for us, that if we eat food that's cooked by a non-devotee, then the mind becomes wicked. That's why I'm very careful about who cooks for me. So usually I cook for myself. And of course, when I go to different places, then people cook for me when I go to Slovenia. But usually if I have a kitchen, I usually cook for myself because I like my cooking best. Prabhupada said people generally like their own cooking best. Prabhupada said also if you cook for yourself, you'll be healthy. So, anyway. And the main reason people get sick in India is because they eat something that has something in it. So if you're careful what you eat, careful what you drink, then you won't get sick in general. I mean, there's also mosquitoes and everything like that. Actually, there's one interesting poem that says, when you go to India, of course this wasn't about India, it was about Mexico, don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. But it also applies to a certain extent in India, too. It was a song about Mexico, I think, many, many years ago. Because in Mexico, when people get sick, they would call it Montezuma's Revenge. And they have a similar thing. Oh, Delhi Belly, they call it here. You understand? Or sometimes devotees say they're getting purified by the Holy Tao. I don't know if it's purification. I think they're just not careful what they're eating. And Prabhupada said his disciples will eat any damn thing. And that was spoken sarcastically, which means, you know, they're so stupid they'll eat any damn thing. So anyway, Prabhupada was very careful about his eating. Prabhupada was living at the Radha Damodara temple, and in spite of living where there's basically wasn't a real kitchen there, but Prabhupada would cook without running water. You know, there's no At least at that time, there were no faucets inside his room. I don't even think there are now. But he would cook all these things on his multi-tiered cooker. He had a very efficient method of cooking. That he would just have one fire, and then he had this a cooker with holes in different sections, so the steam would go up, and he could cook rice and, you know, everything. You know, sabji, it's not the Prabhupada just had one preparation. He was able to do this. The Prabhupada was, the Prabhupada was always very careful what he ate. The Prabhupada always, even when he was living alone. I mean, you don't have any story of Prabhupada eating in a restaurant. Even in a Hare Krishna restaurant. You just don't have that story there. Prabhupada always had his own cook and everything like that. So, you see, the Prabhupada also said that even when the brahmanas were asked to serve in the army, they would have their individual kitchens or spots where they could cook. A kitchen doesn't mean a whole big thing like that. It means just like a little spot, a shelf where you could put like a kerosene stove or something and cook. Because they're very careful about the mind being contaminated. So, of course, it's not practical in the brahmachari ashram for all the brahmacharis to have their little stoves. But it's very important. What you eat, who cooks for you. I mean, in other words, I won't eat unless I really know that the person cooking has good consciousness. And I know the person. I mean, I just won't take a chance, even in a temple. I just don't know. And sometimes in India, you find people cooking in the temple and they're smoking these bidis, which are like an Indian self-roll cigarettes, right? The bidis. Anyway, during festivals, especially they hire people, isn't it, in Vrindavan? And, you know, in the restaurants, you know, even the restaurant, you know, the Hare Krishna restaurants here. Anyway, not asking everybody to be as strict as me. So anyway, Grandfather Bhishma, his mind became contaminated by eating food cooked in the kitchen of Duryodhana. And obviously there were non-devotees in Duryodhana's kitchen. I mean, if the chief is a demon, you can expect the cooks to be demons too. It's not that the cooks are going to be better than the chief guy. So anyway, so all these things happen, and eventually there's the Mahabharata War. Okay, so the Mahabharata War is there. Grandfather Bhishma is the commander in chief on the wrong side, because he has this whole feeling of obligation. He's made a promise, even though he knows it's not dharmic. In fact, there's some indication in the Mahabharata that his mind or his consciousness even became possessed by demons. There's a story that Duryodhana is assured by the demons one time he becomes very depressed because he was defeated by the Gandharvas and the Pandavas saved him. So he became very depressed. He tries to commit suicide, basically, and the demons take him for a pep talk. And they say, don't worry, we're going to possess all these different sages and everything like that. Like Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Bhishma. We're going to possess their consciousness, their minds. So they were actually ghostly or demoniacally possessed because they were taking the wrong side. So Grandfather Bhishma realizes that later on when he's lying on the bed of arrows, that he realizes he made the mistake. He didn't understand that dharma means to really, not only to follow the order of the Lord, which is the main aspect of dharma, but to understand that the result of an activity determines whether it's dharmic or adharmic. So that has to be considered. You know, what is the result of the activity rather than the activity itself? So that's called, in English, consequentialism. You understand? Consequential. You consider the consequences of an action. I was just listening to a class where Prabhupada was talking about that too. He said, talking about killing, he said, if the government orders you to kill, then, you know, if it's for dharma, then you can do that, even though killing is adharmic in one sense. And then Prabhupada gave the example of how Yudhisthira was ordered to lie in the Battle of Kurukshetra So the Drona could be killed. You know, Yudhisthira had to say that Ashwatthama is dead. And Yudhisthira was interested in mundane dharma or mundane religiosity. And he stuck to that. And as a result, he actually got punished. His chariot touched the ground. He had to see hell after he left this world. And he ultimately did lie by saying that Ashwatthama the elephant is dead. But he said the elephant in actually a very low voice. So he lied while trying not to lie. So he got the worst of both worlds. In other words, he should have obeyed Krishna. But then even when he obeyed Krishna in such a way that he was lying. You understand? He thought he was telling the truth when he said, Ashwatthama, the elephant. But when you do that, when you're very evasive like that, it's the same as lying. When you're trying to hide what you're saying. Anyway, so Bhishma learned that at the end. So he became the commander-in-chief of the battle, on the wrong side, on the guru's side. But still, you know, he had enough religiosity there that he didn't fight seriously with Arjuna. Duryodhana taunts him and says, look, you're just acting like a wimp, you know, you're not really fighting properly. And of course, Bhishma is a Kshatriya and he thinks this is an insult. He says, all right, I have 5 golden arrows. The next day I'm going to kill the Pandavas. And Bhishma puts all of his potency into these arrows. He says, these arrows will kill the 5 Pandavas. Duryodhana keeps them himself for safekeeping because he knows that, you know, something may happen. But Krishna is more tricky than that. So Krishna says to Arjuna, you should ask Duryodhana for a boon. And these Kshatriyas, when they were asked for something, like Karna, he was asked for his armor, he gave it. You know, because when a Kshatriya, someone begs a Kshatriya for something, that's part of the Dharma. So Arjuna goes to Duryodhana and asks for a boon. And because Duryodhana has also promised Arjuna a boon when he was rescued from the Gandharvas by Arjuna. So this goes back to that story. So Arjuna asks for the arrows. And so Arjuna gets these arrows. He breaks the arrows. Duryodhana tells Grandfather Bhishma to make 5 more. And Bhishma said, I can't because I gave all my potency to these 5. It's an interesting story. But the next day, I'm vowing I will kill Arjuna or cause Krishna to break his promise not to fight. So the next day, there's that famous story where Krishna grabs the chariot wheel, rushes at Grandfather Bhishma, and Grandfather Bhishma, in this chivalrous relationship with Krishna, is firing arrows at Krishna. And Krishna feels them all like it says in the Bhagavad, like a lover's bites or something like that. He feels them all like loving exchange. That's a chivalrous exchange. Also, there's some ghastliness in there, too. And, of course, Krishna doesn't have a material body, but he experiences these things as a rasika exchange with Grandfather Bhishma. So, anyway, so Krishna protects Grandfather Bhishma. Finally, Shikhandi steps into the fray. Bhishma reveals that he will not fight if there's a woman there, because generally women didn't enter the battlefield. It's not like the modern day Israeli army. I don't know what it's like in Slovenia. Do they have ladies in the army? In America too. They have ladies, you know, fighter jet pilots. Hopefully they don't get too emotional while they're fighting. I'm angry. Like that. So anyway, sorry about that one. So anyway, so but Grandfather Bhishma, he says, I will never fire an arrow at a woman or someone who was previously a woman. But he knows Shikhandi was previously Amba. And he knows that Shikhandi had a sex change operation from Stunakarna. Remember that story? The Yaksha. So he says, so what happens is that Krishna tells Arjuna, you put Shikhandi in front of you and as your shield. And Grandfather Bhishma, when he sees that, he just like shoots his arrows down and up and, you know, all sorts of ways, but not at Arjuna, not at Shikhandi, certainly. So Krishna tells Arjuna, you just keep firing your arrows. So he fires all these arrows, boom, 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 boom. And he fills Grandfather Bhishma with arrows. Grandfather Bhishma is still rushing towards him. And eventually, you know, with the final arrow, it knocks him to the ground, and he's on his back in the bed of arrows. So he's lying there, you know, completely incapacitated, but not dead, because he has gotten the boon from his father, Shantanu, when he arranged his father's marriage. His father was so pleased that his father said, you will not die unless you want to. And Prabhupada said at that time, father's boon was very, very powerful. If father blessed you, that was it. So he was able to keep his life like that. So he's lying there, and you know, you can imagine an ordinary person, 1 hour is enough to get make you bleed to death. And so, and then he's feeling a little bit, he's feeling pretty uncomfortable. But his head is, you know, Arjuna didn't fire any arrows at his head. So his head is just like dangling there. And he says, you know, I would need a pillow or something for my head. And Duryodhana tries to get a pillow, and Grandfather Bhishma says, no, I don't want a pillow from you. I don't want a pillow. And Arjuna arranges the proper pillow by firing arrows in the ground to form like a V to hold Grandfather Bhishma's neck up. So that's his pillow as he's lying there. And then Grandfather Bhishma says, I'm thirsty. So then Arjuna fires an arrow into the ground, and the celestial Ganges comes out of the ground, and like a stream, goes into Bhishma's mouth. So his thirst is satiated at that particular point. So he lies there during the whole time of the battle of Kurukshetra. It's amazing, isn't it? And that's during the month of December. And during the month of December, what happens? Around the 21st.
The winter solstice?
Yeah, the sun changes direction. Right? The sun goes to the north. So therefore, that's an auspicious... So he's waiting for that time. He's also calculating that particular time. So Grandfather Bhishma passed away shortly after sun changed direction, because that's considered more auspicious. So, but also, I mean, he's lying there, and the whole battle of Kurukshetra is over, etc., and we don't need to tell the whole story of the battle of Kurukshetra. And he's after that, he's giving instructions to Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira basically doesn't want to become the emperor, because he feels completely guilty about what happened. He feels guilty for killing all these people, creating a religion, as Arjuna talks about in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. That if you kill all the men, then the women won't be protected, there'll be illegitimate progeny and so many problems in society. So he feels completely guilty. All these women are crying. You know, there's millions and millions of bodies lying there. So much so that, you know, they practically can't take care of them. The vultures have to come and take some of them. And all the wives have come out there. You can imagine the scenario. All the wives have come out there, see their husbands' bodies. And they're all, you know, just like weeping and wailing. And in the middle of this is Grandfather Bhishma on the bed of arrows. And so Yudhisthira thinks, you know, hey, I've created this havoc. I can't take on the position of being the emperor. And Grandfather Bhishma preaches to him about why he should take on the position. Also, he preaches about the king's duties in the... Bhishma Parva, the final section, I think it's Anushana Parva, I forget the name of it, but in the final section of the Mahabharata, you have Bhishma preaching to Yudhisthira Maharaj and the other Pandavas about religious duties, and Yudhisthira's asking questions. And Bhishma has a very clear mind, because Krishna blesses him. Even though he's filled with arrows, you have Krishna blessing him, your mind should be clear, you're not going to feel any pain. So he preaches like that and waits for the proper time, and then Krishna is there, and he looks at Krishna and leaves this world. And basically, I mean, he's a pure devotee, obviously, this is a pastime. And then he goes back to the heavenly planets to serve Krishna there. And that's the story of Grandfather Bhishma. All right, is there any questions? Questions about Grandfather Bhishma? No? No? Gokul Chandra? No. You're not going to ask why didn't he go back to home, back to Godhead after ever seeing Krishna at the time of death?
I wanted to ask that.
Well, he went to serve Krishna.
Yeah, I was satisfied with this, but he said that
he went to serve Krishna in the heavenly planets. At that point, you know, he's a Mahajan. And so he had to realize certain things, you know, and that was his path. You know, to realize what real religiosity is. That's, you know, as Krishna says to Arjuna in the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Parichaja, Mami Kam Sarvam Braja, surrender. And Mami Kam, to serve me. Sharanam, surrender. And Aham Tvam Sarva Papaibhyo, I will free you from any of these sins that you may be committing by lying or whatever. Moksha Yashami Masu Chaha. I'll free you and don't worry about it. Isn't it? So that's the lesson that Grandfather Bhishma learns, one of Sharanagati, absolute surrender to the Supreme Lord, and how that takes care of everything. And you have no more debts to society, or what do they say, the demigods, or father, or mother, or anything like that, if you serve and surrender to Krishna. And that's, once Bhishma learns that lesson, you know, that's it. And so then he can go to the heavenly planets to serve Krishna. That is back to Godhead. If one is Jivan Mukta, for all intents and purposes, that's back to Godhead. In other words, if you're a pure devotee, Narayana Paraksarve Nakutashina Vibhuti Swargapavarga Narakeshu Api Tulyartha Darshana, wherever you go, it's the same. Whether you go to heaven, whether you go to hell, whether you stay in the material world, or you go back to Godhead. That's from the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's in reference to Chitraketu being cursed, becoming the demon Rudrasura. You understand? Lord Shiva's glorifying Chitraketu, because even though Chitraketu is cursed, he accepts the curse from Parvati. You understand? Raina Paraksarve Nakutashana Viviti Swarga Bhavarga Narakeshu Apitoriarta Darshana. Okay? No questions? Cool.
You spoke about karma.
Yeah, what about karma?
If my action, intention and action itself, if it's good, but then the result is somehow negative. Do I get positive or negative reaction?
Well, if you're not following Krishna's direction, you get a negative reaction. Okay. If you're following Krishna's direction, the reaction is good, even though it seems bad.
Okay.
But if you follow, the idea is to do, and you know, if you're a devotee and trying your best to please Krishna, you make a mistake, you know, what can you do? Krishna, you know, you're forgiven. But if you're a non-devotee, then if you don't consider, let's say, you know, you don't consider the results of an action, just stick to the action, yes, there's karma for it.
Yeah. And is it also like if the intention and action itself is negative, but somehow it gets positive results, somehow something...
It means you're just lucky. Means you're lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Do you get mixed?
I mean, if you have a good result from your action, you're trying to do something bad. Give me an example of that.
Okay. This is very artificial.
Yeah.
Let's say that you want to kill someone.
Yeah.
And then there's tiger behind you, try to attack the person, and you accidentally kill the tiger.
That's actually a good example. Accidentally kill the tiger.
Yeah, and you kill the person, and the person thanks you for it.
Well, there's going to be a bad reaction for the attempt to kill.
Yeah.
Just like under the, it'll be a mix. Just like under the law, if you attempt to kill someone, mm-hmm. you know, that's against the law, attempted murder.
Yeah.
So, the intention is important. And that's a good example to illustrate the point. So it'll be mixed. I mean, you get some benefit because accidentally you saved the person and killed the tiger. But your attempt was to kill him. So that's a mix. Karma can be mixed like that.
Yeah.
That's good. But if you're a devotee, let's say you're a devotee and... Oh, I hate to use that example. But anyway, let's say a devotee and you're trying to shoot the tiger by accident, you shoot the person. Wow. Just like even in the government, you know, like if you're trying to shoot someone and then a stray bullet goes somewhere, or shooting it to protect a robber and a stray bullet hits an innocent person, you're not held guilty for that. That's accidental. So, anyway, don't shoot your guru. Even accidentally. If there's a tiger, just try to get rid of the tiger without killing the guru at the same time. All right.